Now it's time to say hello to Richard Collins at his home in Malahide. Aidan Ilana, who's joined me here in studio, and once again, Michelle Brown, our researcher, is back in with some of your correspondence over the past few weeks. But first, I want to start with you, Richard. When is the dawn chorus likely to peter out, or will it go on and on and on and on?
Well, look at ourselves. We're all into serenading and dancing and everything until we have children and the children take over. And then the next thing is it's all nappy changing and all the rest of it. And then we're about slightly clapped out by the time the kids are through the educational system. So we stop singing. Well, the birds are a bit like that. They've got to go into molt, grow new feathers after all of this. And you can't do two things at the one time if you're a bird. That is essential.
Well, if you're a male bird, anyway.
Or male bird. Well, the same is true of female birds. Remember, there is an interesting paper which found that the American woodcock actually breaks all these rules, but we won't go into that. But usually...
Breaks what rules?
Well, a rule is that life for a bird is so competitive, it's so intense, that it must devote all its energies to the task in hand. And a young male, for instance, setting up territories and singing to get a wife and to hold the territory, can't be diverted into doing something different. If he's migrating, he can't be breeding. If he's breeding, well, he can't be migrating. Everything must go, but everything is risky. You pull out all the stops, all hands to the pumps, as they used to say in the Navy when the ship was sinking. That kind of thing. So you have to devote yourself entirely to singing when you sing, entirely to performing eggs if you're a female, entirely to migrating if you're either, and you don't mix it up at all. And that's a central rule. So now that the children are raised and we no longer have to defend territories and we no longer have to get partners, well, we can afford to let it all hang out, shed our feathers, go into retirement, grow a new set, and then in the spring we will resume. But growing new feathers is a demanding task. You've got to eat enough to get all that protein in to build up those feathers. So that's what happens.
But some of the birds will breed again and have a second go. Sing again a second time? I mean, you get second robin's nests, you get second swallow's nests. I mean, they can't be losing their feathers if they have to go courting again. Do they sing as avidly?
They're not courting with the same bird.
That's what I'm asking, Richard. I mean, you know, in a lot of cases they are, obviously.
They're usually, yes. You see, you can spread your eggs over three clutches or two or three clutches, lay four or five eggs. You lay four or five and then you raise them and you get rid of the first brood and then you're into the second brood and maybe a third brood. So it's a way of distributing the risk, really. Things like blue tits, for instance, produce a very large clutch, but it's a once-off for most of them. There's about a 30% of them that breed a second time. But generally speaking, you spread out your resources over the three clutches. Now you are worn out. Your feathers are all tatty. You're tired. You've got there. So now is the time you have to relax, take it easy. Go into torpid kind, well, not torpid, but you relax and you start growing your new feathers. That's demanding too. You've got to eat enough to get your new feathers. And if you're going to be a migrant, you've got to do it fairly quickly because you've got to be on your way. So it's a one thing at a time regime.
All right. Anyway, so you can listen back to The Dawn Chorus on our podcast. Just go to rte.ie/Mooney if you'd like to just relax some time and listen to the birds sing if they have stopped singing where you live. But thank you for all of your contributions and involvement in the broadcast. It was fantastic. Anyway, Michelle Brown, our researcher, is in studio because you have been communicating with us. Michelle.
There's a lovely email in about gossamer. Hi, Derek and team. It's from Barry McCarthy. I was wondering if you could do a little bit on gossamer. I was walking in Mungrave Park just outside Limerick City on Sunday evening with my three daughters and saw something we hadn't come across before at sunset, which looked otherworldly. The park keepers have left a good bit of the park unmown for the last 2 years and the vegetation is a bit rank and their old dock seed heads sticking up all over the place and they were covered in what he thinks was gossamer and he said it looked like hundreds of candy floss sticks through the park and he's wondering were these caterpillar nests or spiderling nurseries or what was going on.
Yes, well, it's great to see that this No More May, or this business of managing the parks less, is giving us such fine results. So there's these all these stalks of dock leaves that are, the stalks of them are left, the flowering stalks. And what's on them actually are the webs of money spiders. There's loads of money spiders. The place is always covered in those webs. But you don't see them unless the atmosphere is right. And he was saying it was the time of sunset. The sun was setting. The light was going from a certain angle and it lit them all up. And you could walk another day and just high noon, or it could be raining and you wouldn't see them. But they're the webs of the little money spiders, which are absolutely tiny things, but they each build a web and they breed there and they catch their food there, and it's down on the grass, and you just see them when the occasion is right atmospherically, and that's what he saw. So it's great that the habitat is there for them to be able to leave their webs there and breed.
And he sent in a picture, Michelle.
Yep, there's some lovely pictures which we're going to put on the website.
We'll put them on the website. Richard, have you ever seen this?
Derek, cast your mind back when we went to London 10 years ago, maybe, was it?
I never remember anything.
You're not that bad. To do a programme on red kites, we went to Poultry. Do you remember Poultry?
Yes,
and
I
that's
do, actually.
The place where tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of geese were brought, and they were plucked. And the air was full of down. And it is from that the word gossamer comes. The word is actually goose summer, because at the end of summer, all these geese would be plucked and the air would be full of goose dust and feathers and so on and so forth. All the silvery gossamers that twinkle into green and gold, said Tennyson.
Poultry is a street in the old city of London. And there's a famous building there you showed me, isn't it?
Lutyens. Lutyens, yes. A nice Lutyens building there with a goose.
With reliefs on it, yeah.
Reliefs on it. Very, very nice. It was a very memorable trip that. We went to the London Museum and we saw all kinds of interesting bones from way back of kites that had been... the place had been infested with kites back in the 18th century. And then, of course, people turned against the poor old kites and drove it out. But anyway,
Michelle.
Okay, so there was an email from Sylvia for Aina. She was out in Rathmullen Beach and about 9 a.m. and she thought she came across a sea snake. And
snake?
That's it. Now, she was saying that her brother-in-law thought it might be a lugworm, but she sent a picture and sent it into Aina.
Yeah, she googled Sea Snake Ireland and, of course, all the stuff about St. Patrick and no snakes in Ireland. Well, they might be right there, actually. There are no snakes in Ireland, and this wasn't a snake. This was actually one of the big worms that live under the ground. Now, the lugworm is quite small. The big one, the one she got, is actually a ragworm. And actually, they're so big, they can be up to a foot long. And if you hold them the wrong way, they can bite you. They've got big, strong jaws. So that's what it was. It was a ragworm. The fishermen know about it. They dig them up and use them for bait. And there are different species of them, and they occur down in the mud, and that was what she, this one was obviously washed up or on the beach or something like that, but it ain't a sea snake.
No, it ain't a sea snake. Richard.
Yes, you bring back another memory. My grandson Tommy, aged I think about 5, and his little brother Liam, where they used to love digging in the mud down in the estuary, and they came up with these giant ragworms, about a third of a metre long. There are 4 species in Ireland, so it was one of them, but it was a huge monster. So they were thrilled with this because, of course, people are terrified of snakes. We have an inherent suspicion of snakes engendered into us by natural selection, I think. So anything that's snake-like tends to inspire awe and fear and so on and so forth. But the poor old ragworms, they can be very big. The biggest ones apparently are in across the water in Wales, near the Menai Bridge, that estuary there, and also in Dublin, very, very large ragworms. They have a funny old lifestyle. At the end of the day, the male will crawl along the mud, depositing its sperm, and the females will burst open to reveal their eggs, and then the old pair will heel over and die.
Sounds like a pleasant way to go.
I suppose.
Worst things to happen to you.
Yeah, look on the bright side.
Richard, the questions on magpies are still coming in, and I have one from a listener, Claire. She was saying that she has some magpie nests built across the road from her, but there doesn't seem to be any magpies nests there or any chicks, and she's wondering, would they build a nest and then abandon it? There's plenty of magpies around her.
Yes, all birds can do this. Remember, it's war, constant warfare in the bird world. Are they last year's, some of their nests by any chance that have survived? It's been a mild winter, so you look up the nest and it may be there since last year. So it may not be a new nest at all. But remember, the magpies are in contention with each other, and it can easily happen that the neighbours are too troublesome here. I'm going to move house. I'm going to change my address. Put it on the market. That might be what is happening. Now, certain birds do a lot of this. The buzzard, for instance. I remember we went to put a camera on a buzzard some years ago.
Hackball's Cross. Is that the name of it, Anya?
Yes, indeed. It was called after what they did to the ribbon men who had burnt Wild Goose Lodge, and they gibbeted them and they chopped off their heads in some places and their arms in other places. And Hackball's Cross got a different part of their
right,
used to be called Cross Widder before that.
But go on, Richard, yeah?
Is that the origin of it?
Would you tell
the grandchildren that. That's the sort of thing they love to hear. But anyway, we had a bit of a lottery on our hands because we couldn't be sure that the buzzard would nest in the nest we thought she should nest in, but she didn't. They built several nests and they choose one. So do wrens. Wrens have a funny way. The cocks make a cock nests. They produce these nests. They're not finished nests. They're kind of showhousey nests, that sort of thing.
Anyway, Michelle.
Another bird question for you, Richard. It's from Tommy D. I have a nest of willy wagtails under the bonnet of my digger. I haven't used it in a couple of weeks. The chicks are just out. How long before they're on their way and I can use the digger again?
Oh, well now, yes, the wagtails. Now, that's an interesting one. Wagtails have, they're like swallows in a sense. They've cashed in on us. Two-thirds of all wagtail nests are now in artificial sites. Now, the question you ask, they lay 5 to 6 eggs, that sort of thing. Can be as many as, I think, about 8 at times. There's usually 2 broods, occasionally 3. And the eggs are laid in the morning, I think. Then both sexes incubate. Well, the female does most of it for about 12.6, 13 days, that sort of thing. And then they fledge and off goes the babies for. And they're looked after in the wild away from the nest for about another 4 to 7 days. So that's roughly. And they breed when they're 1 year old. So you can slot those figures in to predict when they're likely to go. Now, will they come back to the same nest? Well, now, that's an interesting one for the second brood. They might. You see, the trouble with second nests is that they're in fighting with the fleas and ticks and things that swarm, that mushroom in nests. So they're infest the chicks from the first lot. So if you go back to the same nest for the second brood, you're laying your eggs in an already infested nest, you see. So there's an incentive to build a new nest where the ticks and the parasites will have to start all over again. So I can't say whether they're going to go back to your digger for a second round or not. It's an interesting thing to study, though.
Why are they called willy wagtails? I know why they're called wagtails, because they wag their tail, but why willy wagtail?
Alliteration. WW, you know.
Is that it?
Yeah, pied wagtails.
I think so.
Yeah,
pied wagtails.
Yeah, but they have tom tits and willy wagtails. They're just pet names for birds that are particularly familiar to us.
And that tail, that tail is everything, remember. It dictates the whole lifestyle. It dictates this colonisation of human habitation by wagtails because they are expert at going up and down vertical cliffs. Because the tail gives you beautiful balance and you can go up and down. You can go into O'Connell Street after nights of revelry and eat. People will be depositing large amounts of...
But Tommy can move his digger once the first lot of chicks are out. He doesn't have to hang around and hope that they come back to the infested nest and do a second go.
You could do that. But is the digger that important? Would you not like to wait around to see if they do nest?
Well, he's not you. I mean, he might have a job that depends on being able to use the digger. He's very decently leaving it there while the...
And a final question for Aina from Colm. The garlic growing wild in the garden is buzzing with bees this lovely sunny morning. I wonder, does this flavour the honey they produce?
Yeah, the garlic growing wild in his garden is actually the three-cornered leek, which has a great garlicky smell, and it absolutely runs rampant. They looked for all the world like white bluebells, in fact. And I wonder, does this flavour the honey they produce? This is the bees. That depends on whether they're honeybees or whether they're bumblebees. I do know one thing. They used to grow wild when I was young, me and Finn McCool up in County Louth. And when the cattle who were out grazing ate the leaves of the garlic, it certainly flavoured the milk. The milk that we got on our porridge was vile. And our mothers used to say, drink it up. It's wonderful. The taste of the garlic is good for you and it'll stop you having flus and germs and colds and things like that. But the actual nectar itself is what they make into honey. And, you know, things like ivy makes lovely honey, things like rapeseed makes lovely honey, so it wouldn't necessarily flavour the honey if there's no garlicky thing in the actual nectar. The garlic is mainly in the leaves and that sort of thing. Oh, we need the late lamented Philip McCabe to give us chapter and verse on that.
I believe John Bowman played some audio of Philip on his programme recently, I was told by several people. It was great to hear Philip being mentioned again. Hello to his family if they're listening in. I was in Slovenia a few weeks ago, Anna, and I had wild asparagus.
Wasn't that lovely?
I was genuinely surprised.
And did you eat it?
I tasted it.
You did so
well. Everybody around me was eating it.
But they were delighted to get such an exotic.
They were, but there it was, wild asparagus. Anyway, Michelle, thank you very much indeed. And you can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. We get a lot of emails every day. And we do our best to answer them in a timely fashion. But there we are. Every now and again, Michelle pops in and we answer them on air. So, Michelle, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure.